Parshas Kisesi. There is the famous juxtapositioning in this week's parsha of the first two or three consecutive parshas in the parsha, mainly. The Torah begins this week's parsha with the concept of Eshes Yifas Toya. Somebody went to war, and under special extenuating circumstances, he may marry the non-Jewish captive. Like we said, it's under very special circumstances. That's halacha number one. Halacha number two is, the parasha tells us, if a person will marry two wives, and one he will love and one he will hate, there's a discussion there. And the third discussion is the Ben Seirer or Moira, the rebellious son. So Chazal famously tell us, for the reason that these parashas are all juxtapositioned, is to tell you that they are all the products of each other. In other words, if somebody is happily married, and then go and seek this second wife, the Eshes Yifas Toya, although by the strict letter of the law it's absolutely permissible, what will inevitably happen is they'll end up having two wives, one of whom is Ahuva, and one of whom is Snua. One is loved and one is hated, and the result of that is the Ben Seir Umayra. That's what Rashi quotes in the beginning of the parasha on Posuk Yud Aleph, to tell you that even though you're allowed to marry her, in Nosa, if you did, Seifa Lios Seino, you will end up hating her. And next, V'Seifa Lahoylid Mimeno Ben Seirer Umayra. That's the famous consecutive parashios in the beginning of Parashas Kisetzi. Now, the Gemara in Sanhedrin tells us the following. A very staggering Gemara, difficult to understand Gemara. The Gemara says, Bikesh David Lavoid Avodah Zarah. David HaMelech wanted to serve Avodah Zarah. And of course, as you can well imagine, as soon as you see a Gemara like that, as you'd expect, the Mefarshim immediately discuss how can it be taken literally and whatever justification you can think of, but there never is a justification for Avodah Zarah. Maybe we'll mention that in a moment. But either way, let's read the Gemara for the moment the way it's written. It says that David HaMelech wanted to serve Avodah Zarah. He was approached by Chushi Ho'ariki. That was his name. He was approached by Chushi. And Chushi says to him, a melech shekamoyscha, somebody like you, such high stature and profile, serving Avodah Zarah, how can that be? So he says, the problem is, answered David HaMelech, that I have a son, a very wicked, rebellious son, Avshalom. And Avshalom is threatening to kill me. If so, he said the following words. Mutav, it is better that I should serve Avodah Zarah, va'al yischalel shem shomayim, b'farhesya, there shouldn't be a public shem chilul Hashem. In other words, if my son kills me, as he's threatening to do, that will inevitably cause and bring about a tremendous chilul Hashem. Imagine the son of the king killing his own father. If, however, I serve Avodah Zarah, then it won't be a chilul Hashem. Why not? Because people will say that the king got his just deserts. The reason why he was killed is because he served Avodah Zarah. It's worth my while serving Avodah Zarah in order to ensure that there's no chilul Hashem. Staggering cheshbon. So Chushi says to him, one moment. My timer, why did you marry a Yifas Toyah? David HaMelech married a Yifas Toya. Who was the Yifas Toya? Rashi explains that Avshalom, this rebellious son, his mother was called Ma'acha. Ma'acha, and she was the daughter of a Melech, she was a princess, and David HaMelech married her and had this wicked son Avshalom. So he says to David HaMelech, why did you marry the Yifas Toya? So David HaMelech answers that, why? Because the Torah said it's permissible to marry her. What's the kasha? I'm allowed to marry her. So he said to him, Loi dorashto smuchin. Don't you make the drosha of the smichus, of the consecutive nature of these parashas. Aren't you aware of the fact that they're juxtapositioned? In other words, you're right, you are allowed to marry the Yifas Toya, but don't you know what's written next? It says, following that, ki yiel ish ben seirer umayra. You knew full well this would happen. Kol hanoise Yifas Toya, anybody who marries a Yifas Toya, yesh loy ben seirer umayra. Now, How does that answer, and what's that got to do with his discussion? Dovid HaMelech was concerned that his son would kill him, and he had every right to be concerned because his son was threatening to do so. He was worried that that would cause a tremendous Chilul Hashem. In order to alleviate that, he was going to serve Avodah Zarah. So why is Hushai Arki suddenly giving him Musa for having married the Ifastaya? What's that got to do with anything? So Rashi explains that the conversation went like this. Dovid HaMelech, you've got this cheshbon that if your son kills you, there'll be a terrible chilul Hashem, so I'm going to be served by the Zohar, and that way there won't be a chilul Hashem. Because people will say, listen, he deserved what he got what he deserved. So Hushai Arki says, one moment, you marry the Ifastaya, right? I'm allowed to. Yeah, but the Torah says that the result of the Ifastaya is what? Is the Ben Seir Umayra. In other words, everyone knows that your son Avshalom is the classic Ben Seir Umayra. Therefore, even in the tragic event that he kills you, it won't be a Chilul Hashem. Why won't it be a Chilul Hashem? Because everyone knows this is not the standard son. This is a Ben Seir Umayra. That's not a Chilul Hashem. Therefore, I'm not disagreeing with your logic. I'm just disagreeing with your calculation. In other words, your logic might be watertight, that yes, in order to prevent a Chilul Hashem, maybe it's worth serving Avodah Zarah. But I'm just disagreeing with your calculation. I claim that there won't be a Chilul Hashem. Why not? Because everybody will understand that you married a Ifastaya. Your child is therefore a Ben Soyer or Moira. That it is not the normal son. This is a terrible, wicked, rebellious son. So if he killed you, it's his problem. It's not a Chilul Hashem. Adkan, the Gemara, the way that Rashi learns. Now, as I mentioned, obviously the Mephoroshim are all very troubled. What did Dovid HaMelech think? We'll have to sell Avodah Zarah to prevent Chilul Hashem. Avodah Zarah under no circumstances is mutter. That's a discussion. Maybe later we'll come back to it. Gemara in Sanhedrin, Kuf Zayin Omud Aleph. So now, maybe one can suggest, as a pshat in the Gemara, not with regard to the Avodah Zarah aspect, what was Hushi's Musa? He gave him Musa. What did he say to him? Why did you marry a Ifastaya? What do you mean, why? Funny question. The Torah says it's Musa. The Torah says it's Musa. What exactly was his Musa to Dovid HaMelech? So maybe we can suggest the following. We have definitely mentioned this in the past. It's very famous. The famous Beis HaLevi. In Parashat Vayigash, one of the most dramatic stories, one of the most dramatic moments in the Torah, is when the brothers of Yosef are shocked into silence. Yosef, HaTzadik, says, Ani Yosef Ha'oid Avi Chai. I'm Yosef, is my father alive? And what do they respond? Nothing. They couldn't answer. So the Medrash says, Oy Lanu Miyoyim Adin. Woe to us on the day of judgment, woe to us on the day of the rebuke. If Yosef HaTzadik, who was the youngest of all the brothers, and he rebukes his older brothers, and they're absolutely shocked, and they have no answer, can you imagine when we get rebuked from HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Yom HaDin, how embarrassed and how speechless we will be? That's what the Medrash says. There's a whole bunch of list of questions. I don't want to get involved now. It's not our subject. We're not learning Parshas Vayigash. But the main question perhaps we can ask, Yosef HaTzadik gave Musa to his brothers? What do you mean he gave a Teichocha? It says that Yosef gave Teichocha to his brothers. He didn't give him Teichocha. He just asked him a simple question. Yeah. I am Yosef. Is my father alive? It's a very legitimate question. What does it mean he gave him Teichocha? Which rebuke? If he would have said to him, how did you sell me, and it's a chutzpah, and it's an avera, that's a teichocha. He didn't say anything. He just asked him a perfectly innocuous question, is my father alive? Says the Beis HaLevi. Do you know what it means? The greatest teichocha you could possibly give somebody is the rhetorical question in which you prove that the person is inherently hypocritical. He's inherently hypocritical. In other words, we remember the story. Yosef HaTzadik wants to imprison Binyamin. And what do the brothers say to him? They beg, you can't do this, our father, our elderly father. All they're concerned about is the health and safety of their father. So what does Yosef say to them? Is my father alive? What do you mean, is he alive? You know jolly well he's alive. We've just been standing here for the last hour telling you that we're concerned about our father's safety. What did he mean to say? That you're hypocritical. If you're so concerned about your father's health, is my father still alive? You weren't so concerned about his health when you sold me all those years ago then. What do they answer? Nothing. There is no answer. Why is there no answer? Because when you prove that the person is himself hypocritical, there's an inherent contradiction in his own behavior, then there is no answer. There's no answer. There's nothing to say to him. So the Beis HaLevi says, that's what's going to happen after 120. We come upstairs, the Beis Din Shomala. Now imagine if they would say to us, tell me, so why didn't you learn? Oh, we have a whole list of questions, a whole list of answers and excuses. Why didn't you get soccer? Why didn't you daven? So imagine HaKadosh Baruch Hu says to you, tell me, why didn't you go and learn the extra hour? Say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I was so busy, you wouldn't believe how busy I was. Okay, let's press play. They switch on the video and they see you went to the golf course for an hour. Oh, so you weren't so busy. Game over. You just proved that the person is a steer on Yinei Ubei. The teretz is only a good teretz as long as you haven't been disproven from your own conduct. Says the Beis HaLevi, that's the teichocha that Yosef is giving his brothers. He just asked them the question. That's the greatest teichocha. That is the greatest teichocha. And he quotes, the Beis HaLevi, a medrash. Fascinating medrash. The medrash says that Eliyahu Novi once met a very ignorant person. This person was so ignorant, this is the way that Eliyahu Novi himself describes the story. He says this person didn't know how to read Chumash or Mishnayos. And not only that, he was mocking me, he wasn't in the slightest bit interested in learning. So Eliyahu Novi says to him, tell me, what are you going to say, La'avicha shebashomayim le'yoyim hadim? You know you're going to have to give a reckoning one day, you're going to have to explain why you're not learning at all. Unfazed. He says to him, don't worry, yesh li dvarim she'ani meishiv. Don't worry, I've thought about it, I have the perfect waterproof answer. What's your answer? Bino vodaas loy nosnuli min hashamayim. They didn't give me a brain, it's not my fault. I've no capacity to learn, I can't learn chumish, I can't learn. I'm thickest person around, I thought about the question, this is my answer. So I'm very comfortable, I'm not worried at all. Says the Medrash, and you are Novi says to him, tell me, if I may ask, Ma Malachtecha, what's your job? What's that got to do with the discussion? He says, tell me, what's your job? He says, I'm a hunter. He says, what type of hunter? He says, I go hunting fish, I'm a fisherman. He says, very interesting. He says, tell me, how did you know how to fish? It's a whole skill, how do you know how to do it? So he says, it's a very complicated thing. You have to know how to put the nets together and where to fish and how to fish and how to put the net in and the bait and to draw the fish out. It's a ganz avoda. So he says, oh, Baruch Hashem, this person answered, Nosnu li bino vodas min hashamayim. Baruch Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave me a great brain and I worked out how to fish all by myself. Said, Eliyahu Novi, compared to Torah, fishing is difficult. Torah is easy. Fishing is a whole skill. Torah, we're going to read in a couple of weeks, and the Torah says, Korev Eilech or Hadovah Moiz. Torah is an open book to everybody. So how can you tell me that Kodesh Baruch Hu didn't give you any brain, any bino vodas? You are inherently hypocritical. Why? Because you've just proven, and you just told me that a Kodesh Baruch Hu apparently did give you bino vodas, and he gave it to you to fish, so certainly you'd be able to learn Torah. All of a sudden, it says he cried and he realized, I've got to be chayzer b'tshuva. Says the Beis HaLevi, this is precisely the point. There is no greater teichach. Imagine Eliyahu Novi would have asked him, tell me, why don't you learn? Oh, I've got hundreds of excuses. But the minute that I disprove this person inherently, oh, that's the reason? Because you don't have Bina Vodas, so could you explain to me how do you have Bina Vodas to go fishing? That's it. Game, set, and match. And I made it, there is no answer. That's what the Beis Halevi says. There's a story that's told. There was an irreligious nurse in this country, not connected to Yiddishkeit in any which way or form. And she was expecting a simcha, she was pregnant, and she decided she wanted to abort. She wanted to abort. And those who knew her tried to convince her otherwise, and she was not receptive to any of their misadroshes. So they managed to convince her to go and speak to Rav Shlomo Zalman Oyerbach, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. They briefed him, obviously, on the story, and they said to her, listen, go and speak to this great rabbi, Rav Shlomo Zalman Oyerbach. He's the leader of Klal Yisrael, you go and speak to him. Alright, fine. She went to speak to him, but Shlomo Zalman Oyerbach did not ask her one single question about the matter in hand. Shlomo Zalman Oyerbach was the great Pikeach, the great Chochem of Yisrael. She comes into his house, and Yosham Aleichem, Tommy, he says to her, what do you do for a living? She says, I'm a nurse, I'm a doctor in the hospital. She said, really? Interesting. Why did you choose that profession? She was a little bit startled. Why? I mean, it's a privilege to be a doctor. You know, here I am, saving people's lives all day, healing them. So Shlomo Zalman says, saving people's lives? Okay, well, what's so special about that? She was even more startled. This is supposed to be the great Rav, the great Pikeach. So she says, it's a privilege. I mean, life is the ultimate sanctity. Sacred, and here I am trying to save lives. She says, why is life so sacred? She couldn't understand the whole flow and the ebb and flow of the conversation. She says, Rabbi, this is where we've been educated. There is nothing more precious and more sacred than life, and here I have the privilege every day to try and extend life. So Shlomo Zalman says to her, oh, I see, you mean there is nothing more precious than life. And if a life is here, then we do everything to try and maintain that life, and certainly we wouldn't want to kill off a life, would we? She left the house, discussion over, and she didn't abort. Shlomo Zalman, with his great pikchus, proved that she was inherently hypocritical. If you would have asked, I've heard, this is what you want to do, I'm sure she would have had a whole list of answers. But Shlomo Zalman didn't start there. He proved to her that she herself lives by this ethos, by the understanding of how important and how precious life is. How can you want to, chas v'shalom, kill off a life? That's the greatest fear. There is no greater fear than that. The story is told, almost a comical story. Reb Chaim Brisker was on a train. Reb Chaim Brisker was on a train, and he overhears, and he did not want to get involved in the discussion. There were some Christian bishop on the train. And they were having a discussion with a Jew, or the Rav on the train. And he says to this Rav, he says, you know, your rabbis clearly don't know what they're talking about. Well, how can you say that? So he says, well, because they told us, says in the Gemara, that Bar Kochva is the Mashiach. Right? But it clearly isn't true. Because he's not the Mashiach. A whole big discussion. So clearly I can prove to you that your rabbis don't know what they're talking about. So Reb Chaim Brisker at that stage decided to step in, and he said, I'm sorry I happened to overhear the discussion, I just want to tell you that Bar Kochba is the Mashiach, that's all. So they say, Mr. Bishop turns around and says, well, forgive me, burst out laughing, how can he be the Mashiach, he's dead. So he said, yeah, but Mr. Mill will come back. The bishop said, but don't be so ridiculous. Once he's dead, he can't come back. He said, fine, that's all I wanted to hear. Thank you very much. That's the greatest tichacha. If you would have challenged him on theological discussions, we rest assured we've got 152 roots in there. Oh, once he's dead, he can't come back. Well, that's what I said. Don't tell me the whole resurrection baloney. That's what he wanted to hear. That's the famous yisoid of the Beis Halevi in Parshas Vayigash. In other words, if you want to really rebuke somebody, don't hit directly at the point. Rather, go by and prove that they're inherently hypocritical. Now let's come back to our story. Dovid HaMelech has in what is his eyes a very valid cheshbon. Avodah Zarah is an Avera, no discussion about it. But over here, what was his justification for being over Avodah Zarah? Because that will ultimately bring about a prevention of a Chilul Hashem, so as it were, quote unquote, it's worth it. What does Chushi Ha'Arki say to him? Why did you marry a Yefastaya? What's that got to do with the discussion? I'll tell you what it's got to do with the discussion. You know that Avodah Zarah is Asa. If you look at the Meister itself, it's Asa. So what's your justification? Because you're considering not just the act, but you're considering the result of the act. And the result is Chilul Hashem prevention. So why did you marry Yefastaya? Because the Torah says it's mutter. But what's the result of Yefastaya? A ben seira u'moira. So make up your mind. Do you concentrate on the act or on the result? If you look at, you're always considering the result, and that's your justification for doing Avodah Zarah because it will bring about a positive result, so why didn't you consider the result when you married the Yefastaya? The answer is, who's talking about the result? I'm just looking at the act itself. Well, then how can you commit Avodah Zarah? In other words, what Chushi Ha'Arki was doing was, he was trying to prove, and again, Chas v'Shalom, we have to be careful, we talk about David HaMelech, the Gemara says clearly that David HaMelech is on a level, we have no Hasogim whatsoever. And with regard to other chatoim, the Gemara says, whoever says that God HaMelech sinned is just merely mistaken. The Gemara doesn't say that you're a Rosh, you're just downright mistaken. We have to be very careful when we speak about David HaMelech. But at least, the way the Gemara puts it, that Kaviyachol wanted to serve Avodah Zarah, that perhaps was Chushi Ha'arki's Musa Shmuz to him. Again, rhetorical question. Why did you marry Yefastaya? In other words, if you want to consider the act on its own right, you can't sell Avodah Zarah. And if you want to consider the result of the act, well, why did you marry the Yefastaya? You knew the result there would be a Ben Seir or Meira. Perhaps that's an approach. Now, I'd like to share with you, and with this we'll finish, something of very, very interesting, important, and painful, perhaps, historical significance. And it's related to the Gemara that we just mentioned. Bikesh David Lavad Avodah Zarah, like we said, it's difficult to believe, and perhaps impossible, and perhaps even forbidden to believe, that it literally means he wanted to serve Avodah Zarah. I read recently in the Hakdama to the Yarei Tzvash. Now we're going to discuss for a moment or two, this is of important historical significance. The Yarei Tzvash is, of course, authored by the great Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz. Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz, who was the leader of Klal Yisrael and a Malach HaLekim Mimal, we have no Hasoga, led a painful, tumultuous life. He was involved in Machlekes from beginning to end. In fact, if you remember, we mentioned last week, that even when he was buried at the Levaya, they threw stones at his mitzvah. Can you imagine? Until he passed away, and they were still running after him. The main machlokes, and I think this is famous, the main machlokes that Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz had was with Rabbi Yaakov Emden. With Rabbi Yaakov Emden, for reasons we'll mention in a moment. Now, Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz, his yahrzeit is actually next week. He passed away in 1764, which means it's 255 years since he passed away. His yahrzeit is next week, Chof Aleph El. So in the introduction there to his Sefer Yarei Tzvash, by the way, one line in the introduction it says, and don't worry, it says that Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz used to give joshes for 6 or 7 hours on the trot. So we're not going to follow that tonight, don't worry. But he used to give joshes, and those joshes form the body of the Sefer Yarei Tzvash. His main joshes were delivered when he was the Av Beis Din in Prague. The Av Beis Din in Prague. So as I mentioned, he had a terrible, terrible, bitter, bitter, bitter machloikas with Rabbi Yaakov Emden, with the Pnei Yeshua, and other Gedali Yisrael. Now one thing is for sure, that when you have a machloikas between Gedali Yisrael, as the Mishnah tells us, that's a machloikas l'shem Shemayim. It's not a chas v'sholem machloikas the way that we would view machloikas. Now we have to be very, very careful where we understand it in order not chas v'sholem to misunderstand it. Now just one or two points about the machloikas, and then we'll come back to the Gemara. There was a great Gadol Yisrael, and his name was Rav Avraham Broider. This Rav Avraham Broider, who was the Rosh Hashiva in Prague, he was Rav Yonasan Eberschitz's Rebbe. Rav Yonasan Eberschitz's Rebbe. Rav Avraham Broider was also caught up in very, very severe controversy. What happened? He was in Prague, and there was a massive machlokes, and the story was as follows. There was a woman whose husband passed away, and this woman had a young child, and she was feeding. She was nursing the young child. Now, the Gemara tells us that if that happens, she's not allowed to get married for 2 years. Why must she not get married for 2 years? Under ordinary circumstances, when somebody's wife tragically passes away, you don't have to wait 2 years, you have to wait 3 yom tovim. You don't have to wait 24 months. Now, that's in the other direction. That's when a wife dies. When the husband dies, in the story, you don't have to wait 3 yom tovim, normally you have to wait 3 months. 3 months. But here you have to wait 2 years. Why? Because she's nursing the young child. And she's nursing the young child, we don't want anything to happen, she'll fall pregnant again, and then she won't be able to nurse the child, so she can't get married for 24 months, as we state in the Gemara. In this particular case, although she had a young child, she wasn't nursing. Why was she not nursing? Because the doctor said there was something wrong with her milk, it's poisonous. Therefore she mustn't feed the child, and indeed she wasn't. So logic would therefore dictate that she's allowed to get married straight away. Because the concern of the Gemara doesn't apply. And Rav Avraham Broider, the great Rosh Hashiva in Prague, maintained that nonetheless it's osur for her to get married. So essentially for 2 years she's an aguna, she's stuck. All the Gedolei Yisrael were against him. And the main one to fight against him was the great Chacham Tzvi. The Chacham Tzvi maintained it's absolutely permissible for her to get married. And the Shmuz Yaakov says it's permissible for her to get married. And Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz also said it's permissible for her to get married. And Avraham Broider maintained his position, he was unmoved. And yet everybody argued. And at the end of the day, the Beis Din permitted her to get married. Because that's the way most Gedolei Yisrael, in fact, passed. 2 years later, Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz says, I want to re-examine the story. I want to get involved, I want to look at the story again. And what happened is, he spoke to medical experts, and medical experts says, Shtusim v'havolim. It's all untrue. And they said it can't be that her milk was poisonous. And they proved it medically, because if it would really be poisonous, it would not only be dangerous to the child, it would be dangerous to the mother as well. And you see that she's alive and happy and healthy and well. So it's all untrue. And based on that, Rav Yonasan Eberschitz retracted his initial heter, although it was too late, she already got married, and he says, I side with Rav Avraham Broider, which as I mentioned, was against all the Gedolei Yisrael, the main one being the Chacham Tzvi, and he says, I maintain that Rav Avraham Broider is right. She's not allowed to get married. So he suggests there in the introduction, this is the one, whoever wrote the introductions, the editor, there's a whole biography there, he says, that was perhaps seeding, that was sowing the seeds of the Machlokes, because the Chacham Tzvi's son was none other than Rabbi Yaakov Emden. So because of this big machloikas, la halacha, between Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz and the Chacham Tzvi, maybe that was beginning just to sow the seeds of machloikas between the Chacham Tzvi's successor and son, Rabbi Yaakov Emden, and Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz. Either way, what really sparked the great outrage was Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz was in Prague, and then he went to Nitz, and then he went to Altoona. Now, in Altoona, who lived there? None other than Rabbi Yaakov Emden. And Rabbi Yaakov Emden's father, the Chacham Tzvi, was one of the founders of that Kehillah. And yet, they overlooked Rabbi Yaakov Emden as being the Rav. And they invited Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz to come from another town, from Nitz, to be the Rav here. And that sparked the big machlokes. Rabbi Yaakov Emden maintained that here I was, I should have been the Rav, you had no reason to come here, you had a good position in Mitz, and that ultimately triggered the Machlokes. And there's a sefer printed by Rabbi Yaakov Emden, all his timers and complaints, and unspeakable zilzulim. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable the criticism and the accusations that were made against Rabbi Yonasan Eberschitz. Until his dying day, He led a tumultuous life. He led a tumultuous life. The Pnei Yeshua, we've all heard of the Pnei Yeshua. The Pnei Yeshua also was a bitter, bitter enemy of Rabbi Amos Leibowitz. But also, under very bizarre circumstances, they bring in a footnote there, that what happened? Rabbi Amos Leibowitz was once on the way to visit the Pnei Yeshua. And indeed, he went to visit, went to Frankfurt to visit the Pnei Yeshua. The Pnei Yeshua had just finished compiling his sefer, Pnei Yeshua, on Seder Noshim. So he gave a copy of the sefer to Rabbi Amos Leibowitz and said, please, would you have a look at my sefer? And I'd be very interested to see if you have any comments. So he gave him the sefer. Rabbi Amos Leibowitz went through the entire sefer, and he had one or two pikpukim, one or two points that he felt that he wanted to argue. So what he did was, on those pages, he just bent over the page a little bit, so that when the Pnei Yeshua would receive the sefer, you would know that on that page, Rabbi Amos Leibowitz disagreed. He dispatched the sefer with a shliach to give it back to the Pnei Yeshua. This shliach was a troublemaker. So what did he do? He took the sefer and he bent most of the pages. So the Pnei Yeshua receives the sefer with most of the sefer with bent pages. So he understood. The Rabbi Amos Leibowitz was sending him a message, but basically, I disagree with your whole sefer. And that triggered a massive machloekus between the Pnei Yeshua and Rabbi Amos Leibowitz. So you see, it was all very murky and bizarre, and a bitter, bitter, bitter machloekus. Now, this is the point that I wanted to mention. They suggest there that this was all, and obviously we as believing Jews obviously believe this, this was all orchestrated min hashamayim. Rabbi Yaakov Emden himself, who as I said was the great nemesis and bitter enemy of Rabbi Amos Leibowitz, himself writes in one particular place, v'hineni nishba, I am ready to take an oath, sha'ani oyhev, I love Rabbi Amos Leibowitz. It looked like that. That's what he himself wrote. So he suggests there in the footnotes, in the introduction to the Aris Devash, and he backs this up, and he brings sources, I'm not going to mention them now. This was all orchestrated min hashomayim. And the reason was as follows. HaKadosh Baruch Hu organizes on occasion that the greatest of the greatest of the great are accused, falsely, of terrible misdoings. Why? Why would HaKadosh Baruch Hu want to do that? And the answer is, he explains, and again he backs this up with various sources, is so that everybody should realize that nobody is above the law. Even the greatest leaders of Klal Yisrael also have to have accountability and transparency. Do not think for a moment, because he's the leader of Klal Yisrael, that we can get away and do whatever he likes. No! If there are misdemeanors, then he also has to be held accountable. And he explains that way, all those, the lesser people, the Hamoyim Am, will take a big musashmuz from that. To realize that if the leaders are not beyond repute, then certainly we aren't. And therefore we have to watch our step. And he says, and this is why I wanted to mention it, that is a chat in the Gemara with Avodah Zarah and David HaMelech. When it says David HaMelech wanted to serve Avodah Zarah, it doesn't mean that he wanted to. Rather, he was accused of wanting to. He was accused of wanting to serve Avodah Zarah. I don't know how it fits in with the whole Gemara there. But the reason being, why was he saying, how can that be that the money gets closed through? David HaMelech Yisrael, Chayvakan was accused of such a terrible Avera. He says, history has proven on many occasions that it was absolutely necessary for the greatest Gedolim and the biggest Tzadikim to be accused, albeit falsely, of the greatest and terrible Averas. Why? So that should be a wake-up call for the rest of the Jewish nation. Nobody is above the law, from the smallest to the greatest. That's how he explains the Gemara. I would just say, in conclusion, do you know where Rabbi Yaakov Emden is buried? In the Beis HaKvaros, right close up by Rabbi Amos Leibowitz. Who paskened that? The Maid of Yehuda. A great Nadi Buddha says, now that Rabbi Yaakov Yonasevichus was Nifta first, and then Rabbi Yaakov Emden, he says, in Shamayim they have made Shalom. If you want to know how bitter this Machlekas was, the Chassam Sofer had a minhag, which he was makabel from his great Rebbe of Nosson Adler, not to put the Sforim of Rabbi Yonasevichus and Rabbi Yaakov Emden on the same shelf. That's how bitter this Machlekas was. He once came to Rabbi Nosson Adler, and he saw that the Sforim of Rabbi Yaakov Emden and Rabbi Yonasevichus were on the same shelf. Says, what happened? He says, I was makabel min Shamayim, they've both passed away, they have made Shalom. And therefore we could put the Sforim back on the shelf. So, as I mentioned before, there's many, many, many things that we need to learn from this. But first and foremost, when there's a machlekes between Gedolei Yisrael, then we undoubtedly understand that it's all Hashem Shamayim, as is clearly recognizable in this story. But the particular point that I wanted to bring out, because it's related to the Gemara we mentioned before, that when Gedolei Yisrael are accused of terrible aveiras, and if you read some of the accusations against Rabbi Yonasevichus, it literally beggars belief. It beggars belief how it can be the great manig of Klal Yisrael was accused of the worst of the worst. And in the opinion of, as I mentioned, one who writes his biography and he backs this up from Gedolei Yisrael, HaKadosh Baruch Hu was running the show over here in order to show that from the smallest to the greatest, there's nobody who's above the law. There's nobody who can get away with anything. Everybody, and of course this is the most timely message, Kibnei Moroim, we all have to give Din V'cheshbon every year. Kibnei Moroim, there's no sheep who can circumvent. Everybody has to go through and give a Din V'cheshbon. Yikotein Ad Godel, even David HaMelech was accused of terrible avarice falsely, as a Musa lesson for Klal Yisrael that everybody ultimately has to give Din V'cheshbon.